Emily, when did you live on the Earth?
Oh, a long time ago now.
19th century?
Yes. We continue from our side of life to influence people still in the body.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to 13 O'Clock Podcast. This is episode 25.
Boy, the episodes are rolling by, aren't they?
Yeah, I know. We say that every week, don't we? We're like, God, we can't believe how many episodes we have.
It seems like a week, you know, comes up quick.
Yeah, yeah.
Sign of getting old.
Time going by fast and shit like that.
Time going by fast. Now we're the time warp.
Yeah. Okay, so what we want to do first, like we usually do, give a shout out to the Project Entertainment Network, on which our audio version of the podcast is hosted. They have a Patreon page still. If you want to go on over there and give them a buck or two, that'd be really rad. There's a bunch of other podcasts on there that are super awesome. And, you know, we run commercials for them sometime. They're all really cool. Yeah. I'm sure you'll find something you like on there if you like this show.
Yeah, and evidently we're still number 4 out of about 13 shows.
Yeah.
And I think more shows are going to get added soon.
Yeah, there is another show being added next month, I believe.
So if you like the show, share this with your friends.
Yeah, definitely.
On Facebook and things like that.
Definitely
we'd
do that.
We'd appreciate it.
Yeah, and the Project Entertainment Network would appreciate it as well.
Yeah, something's happening because Jenny's getting about 100 friend requests on Facebook per day now.
Yeah, I don't know how that happened. I must have reached some kind of critical mass where I was turning up and everyone suggested friends. Because at first I thought they were all like fake accounts. But then people started messaging me saying, no, I just heard your podcast or no, this and that. I just, you know.
That and you got half of India trying to friend you.
Well, yeah.
Okay.
So, I've experienced that before.
Yeah.
But and also, since this is another kind of paranormally ghosty type of topic we're doing today, I also want to remind everybody I have a new book coming out, probably be finished by the end of this month. I'm not promising anything, but it's called The Unseen Hand.
This is going to be a great book.
Yeah, I hope so.
It's a definitive work.
Yeah, and if you are interested in poltergeist phenomena, then it's kind of going to be, my goal was to make it kind of like a one-stop shop where basically I have summaries of well over 100 poltergeist type cases going back to like the 6th century.
Yeah, good ones. Ones that were actually witnessed by the authorities of the time.
Right, yeah.
And things that were documented that they actually had witnesses.
Yeah.
It's not campfire tales.
Yeah. And then there were a couple, I discussed a couple of like ones that were probably hoaxes in there too, just to provide some contrast. But also it's going to have like the end section is going to be like what the current like parapsychological sciences and what causes them, or you know how they could be hoaxed, various other things.
There's a lot of books like this kind of on ghost phenomena, but I've never seen one on poltergeist.
Yeah, there are probably, I think there are very few that are just poltergeist centric.
Right, this is going to be the newest one, probably be a very popular book. I predict it's going to be your bestseller.
I hope so.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, the print and ebook, I'm trying to get it out by the end of the month. And then I'm going to do an audiobook version too. Audiobook version.
Yeah.
But that will probably take much longer. But I'll let everybody know when that is up too.
Yeah. And the audiobook is going to be long because this is a long book. So it wouldn't surprise me if that audiobook would be $35, $40. But it's probably 5 hours.
Well, it's gonna be more like 8 hours.
More
I
like
think.
8 hours, at least.
Considering how long my last audio book.
So
were.
It will provide hours of entertainment and knowledge.
Yeah, sure. Okay, so with all of that housekeeping out of the way, let's get to the topic today, which, like I said, is kind of a ghosty type of thing, paranormal type of thing.
Yeah.
We're talking about the skull experiment.
The old skull experiment.
Now, if you don't know, the skull experiment is often put forth in the paranormal community as one of the most compelling, some of the most compelling evidence of life after death, they usually want to say, or paranormal phenomena in general. And I should say it's generally referred to as the skull experiment, but actually it was a series of essentially seances.
Yeah.
About 500, a series of about 500 seances taking place over a 5-year period from 1993 to 1998.
Yeah.
And they took place in a farm. Most of them took place in a farmhouse in a little village called Skoll in Norfolk, in England. Mm. And which is why they're called the Skoll Experiment. Now, the stated goal of the Skoll Experiment was to see if they could establish communication with the dead. Basically, the core group was four mediums. It was two sets of married couples, Robin and Sandra Foy, and Alan and Diana Bennett. And so that was like the core group. They're spiritualists.
Yeah.
And there were also a couple other mediums, and they also had, over the course of it, they had many investigators, usually from the Society for Psychical Research, that would come and sit in. And I think on some of the other seances, they also had like visitors and things. Now, the members of the Society for Psychical Research that came, some of them were scientists. Some of them, like, you know, plant biologists, engineers, that type of thing. And I think what we're going to do, we're just going to kind of go through and say, like, what the manifestations were that appeared at these various seances. And then maybe, you know, after the break, we'll kind of break down
what happened.
What happened, and
what the results of this experiment was.
Right. So basically, I mean, they started this series of experiments, and according to them, they have, you know, they have an official website called theskollexperiment.com, and you can go look at it if you want to. They said that when they first started out, they didn't really get much for the first few weeks. I think they had a seance about every month. Sometimes they were more often.
Yeah, and I would say that probably kind of like the ringmaster of this whole experiment was Robin Foy.
Well, yeah, Robin and Sandra Foy, they were the ones that started it. And it should be noted that most of the experiments took place at their house.
Right.
Like I said, their house in Skoll.
Down in a basement.
Yeah, it was a 17th century farmhouse.
Right.
And they had a big basement in the house, and that's where almost all of the seances took place.
And there were big claims about this phenomena. This is some really weird phenomena that they claimed to have captured.
It is pretty weird, you know, but we'll get to that. But right. I'm gonna say, so it took a while for anything to kind of come about, really.
Yeah, I think they were messing around, about a year before they got any manifestations.
Yeah, I think it might have been about a year. Right. They were kind of like trying to contact people and whatnot.
Contacting the dead. It's like, you know, it's pretty much like the 19th century spiritualism. They were basically spiritualists.
They are spiritualists.
Yeah. And they're spiritualists along the lines of, you know, what you saw in the 1800s and the 1900s.
Yeah.
Very New Agey.
Yeah. And it should be said, too, I mean, Robin and Sandra Foy are, you know, what are called physical mediums, you know, which if you know anything about, you know, like 19th century, early 20th century spiritualism, those are mediums who can produce physical objects. Now, back in the day, they used to do ectoplasm, and that's what was moving things and all this other kind of stuff. Now, these guys, they do the same kind of stuff, but they say they don't need ectoplasm anymore because now they have like some kind of spirit energy or whatever. So they don't have to do the ectoplasm thing. And, I don't know. Ectoplasm has always kind of fascinated me because I'm like, where did that idea come from that you had like this kind of ghost snot coming out of your nose or out of your mouth? Cause that was a very common aspect of the early spiritualist.
Well, if you ask me, all right, let's just be a straight shooter. They needed a trick to do during the seance. So you just put an object somewhere and then you pull that object out.
Yeah.
All right. Well, in this case, you could take wadded up bits of cheesecloth and cotton and stuff that up in some bodily orifice and then pull it out. Pull it out of there.
And then you make up
an explanation of what it is.
Yeah.
That's ectoplasm. Oh, yeah. What does ectoplasm do? Ectoplasm does this and this and that.
It moves things around.
It moved things around. So it was just a trick they could do.
Yeah.
Because there are definite photographs from the 1900s of ectoplasm.
Coming out of people's noses and
vages. And
I think we mentioned that on the Houdini versus the Spiritualist show.
And it's damn cheesecloth. It looks like cloth. It is cloth. Or it looks like cotton. It is cotton.
Yeah. It usually was. Sometimes painted with luminous paint if you wanted to get all fancy.
With a photograph in it. So yeah. There's one famous picture, photograph of ectoplasm with a woman's face in the ectoplasm. It's obviously a cutout photograph laying inside the cotton.
Yeah.
You know, oh, she's manifesting.
Yeah. It probably looked a lot better in the dark, I'm just saying.
Yeah.
But, so anyway, back to the skull experiment. So they started this series of seances. Now, they claim that it took about until, I don't think it took quite a year, but it was in about October 1993. I think they started in February 1993. Now, in October 1993, they said they got their first physical manifestation. And this was a coin that apported, quote unquote, appeared out of thin air and landed on the table. And then they started seeing all these lights that were kind of flickering around the room and things like that. Now, over the course of the 5 years that they were doing the skull experiments, there was a wide, wide range of various physical manifestations. One of the most common ones was lights that would kind of flicker around the room, or sometimes they said that they would bounce off of tabletops and like make a noise, like something hitting the tabletop.
Yeah, they said like a light would come down out of the sky or out of the, you know, near the ceiling area and hit a table and go pop.
Yeah.
And then it would do it again, pop, and then slip through the table and be underneath the table.
Yeah.
And vanish, things like that.
Yeah. They saw.
Or one, a light would come and it would, in one case, it touched a woman's knee and supposedly healed her knee.
Yeah, that's right. And then, they were supposed to have healing powers.
Lights. And then they started to develop what was called like a spirit team. And this was a team of ghosts on the other side that spoke to them and taught them things. And, you know, it's even sent them messages. You can get into that too about the photographs.
Yeah. Like I said.
The film.
Right. So, other than the lights, there were also a great deal of apportations. You know, objects appearing out of thin air, landing on the table. It was usually small items. You know, jewelry, coins, that type of thing.
A vintage newspaper from the 40s.
Yes, that was about. Actually, they thought that they had contacted the spirit of, what was it, Helen Duncan, right?
Yeah,
that was
her name. She was tried during
wartime. She was a medium during wartime, and she was actually tried for witchcraft.
Yeah.
I think because they thought she was a spy, right? If I recall correctly.
Because she predicted some things she couldn't have known.
That she couldn't have known, right.
Only the Germans would have known about that.
Yeah, that's right. So, yeah, in England, she was tried for witchcraft.
Ship, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, that's right. I think we saw a documentary about that, actually.
She knew that a ship had sunk. And she could have only known that had she known somebody that was on a top secret panel inside the English military, the British military, or possibly the Germans. So I think they tried her for witchcraft, just to shut her up.
Yeah, probably.
About that. About the sinking of that ship.
Yeah. At some point, the mediums involved in the skull experiment claimed that they had contacted Helen Duncan. And one of the apports was a newspaper from 1944, I believe, that landed on the table in front of them and had an article about her being convicted of witchcraft. Now, here's a weird thing, though.
Let me vape a bit. Hold on.
Okay. The weird thing, though.
Gotta take a hit off that. All
right. He's got his Darth Vader voice back there. Darth Vader noises. But the weird thing about the newspaper, I will say, is that evidently, the newspaper was analyzed, and it was a newspaper from that time period.
Yeah, it was authenticated.
It was authenticated. You know, the type of printing they used, the type of paper they used, it was a newspaper from 1944, and evidently, it wasn't yellowed.
Like it was new.
I don't know if it looked new, really, because I've seen photographs of it.
Yeah.
I mean, it
was in good condition.
Yeah, it was in good condition. It wasn't yellowed like a paper from 1944 would, like you'd think it would be. So that was one of the apports. And
oh well, hold on though. You gotta mention that
what
the medium,
right?
I think it was Foy's wife, right?
I think
it was at the time.
Sandra, her name is
Sandra. She was speaking in the voice of this medium from the 1940s, crying and whining about her trial, and I thought that was kind of a funny thing.
Yeah,
and she provides the papers.
She slammed it down on the table.
Look at what they did to me. Yeah, that kind of stuff. Kind of compelling. That would have been traumatic to see, I think.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure if you were there.
Yeah.
But I think, as Tom mentioned, over time they said that they established communication with a whole host of spirits, which they called the spirit team, which I thought was kind of cute.
Yeah.
And these members of the spirit team would tell them various things. And they, and now, okay, although it was claimed that some of the voices of the spirit team would come out of thin air or come out of the corners or something like that, in general, I think most of the voices of the spirit team came through the mediums.
Yeah.
Like, the, so it was just them speaking in other voices.
Yes, Sandra.
With other personalities and things like that.
And there's recordings of the voices, and it does sound like an Edwardian woman from a long time ago talking.
Yeah.
I don't remember what the name of that spirit was supposed to be.
Mrs. Bradshaw.
Mrs. Bradshaw. Mrs. Bradshaw would give you whole lectures about what it was like on the other side and what the universe was really like and what life was for. And then, oh, hold on, there's another spirit that's coming through. She wants to talk and this kind of stuff.
She was very posh, Mrs.
Bradshaw.
Yeah, kind
of cool. Kind of cool.
I think she was kind of ended up being their favorite one because they said that after all of this time that they were doing these experiments, you know, they kind of, you know, all the spirit team kind of became part of their family and stuff like that. You know.
You could ask them questions and they'd answer.
Yeah. And, you know, they had all different ones. They had one named Patrick McKenna, who was an Irish priest. They had one named Raji, who was from India. Yeah, Emily Bradshaw. And a bit like a schoolmistress, they said.
Yeah.
And they also said that there was another group of spirits that were like on a higher plane that would sometimes communicate through the lower spirits that were talked through the spirit team. So we have like three layers of spirits going on here.
Elementals and angelic beings and things like that.
Right, right. So now it should be noted too that, and actually this kind of ties in. Now one of the spirits that supposedly contacted them was Thomas Edison.
Yeah. He left instructions, as a matter of fact.
Now, before we get into that, let me say, this is one of the weirdest manifestations of all the Skoll experiment kind of seances. What they would do, now the first thing they started doing, and I guess that one of the spirit team told them to do this, or so they claimed, they would bring in a camera and they would sit it in the middle of the table where they were having their seance. Now, the room where they're having the cellar where they're having
this. Is it a camera or is it just a roll of film?
No, it was first. At first it was a camera.
Okay, okay.
Now, the room where they were holding these seances, which they affectionately termed the skull hole, was almost pitch black.
Yeah.
No light sources, no windows, no nothing. So it was really, really dark in there. But they took to putting a camera in the middle of the room. Now, some, like Sandra claimed and some of the other mediums claimed, that in the darkness, they would hear the camera lifting up off the table and kind of whooshing around over their heads, and they would hear the shutter clicking.
Right.
Now, when they would later develop the film, there was all this weird shit on it. Yeah. Like there were pictures that looked like colored bubbles. There were pictures that looked like kind of impressionistic sort of designs with like human faces in them.
Yeah.
I think there was one that looked like pyramids. There was one that looked like, I think it was St. Peter's Cathedral in London during the Blitz.
Yeah.
You know, things like that. So like all these pictures would mysteriously appear.
Yeah. One of the strange things about it is some of those photos that would be produced would be, you know, I hate to say it, but stock photos.
Well, yeah, that picture of St. Peter's Cathedral for sure was. And I think one of the photos they produced was actually Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. Cause I said, I've seen that picture. That's in every book about him.
Right.
So, you know, that's a little fishy.
Fishy.
That these pictures that appeared. Now, after a while, the spirit team evidently told them that they didn't need the camera anymore. They just needed to bring some film in and they would put things on the film.
Right.
And they claim that they would bring in film. They wouldn't even take it out of the package or anything like that. And then later, when they developed it, there would be all this shit on it. Now, after a while, it wasn't just pictures. Now it was like writing. There was like writing on the
writing
film.
Writing and drawings.
And it was in all different languages. I think there was one, there was some poems in German. There was some in Sanskrit, I think, when there. There was some in Latin.
Yeah. There were some Greek ones.
There were some Greek ones. There was stuff that were...
German palms. Rare German palms.
There were some that were like cryptograms that were like little symbols that they
almost could, like a high, weird hieroglyphic looking
and
stuff.
And like some of them they figured out, but they didn't... I don't think they ever told us what they said, but they said they figured them out. Some of them they didn't figure out. And going back to what I was saying about Thomas Edison, one of these films that they developed, it had this writing on it, and then it had a little diagram of a little doohickey.
Of how to build something.
Of how to build something called a germanium something or other.
Yeah.
And it's
signed.
It was supposed to help them like communicate with the spirits better.
Yeah.
And it was signed TES.
Yeah.
And when they investigated, they found that the little signature matched, T-A-S rather.
Yeah.
It matched Thomas Edison's.
Thomas Edison.
What the fuck am I saying? S?
I don't know.
Thomas Alva, T-A-E.
T-A-E.
Yeah. Thomas Alva Edison. Jesus Christ. I don't know what I'm doing. So, so apparently the signatures matched. So Thomas Edison was telling them how to build a little doohickey to, you know, facilitate,
To
talk to them better.
Give them some technology, special spirit technology.
Right.
Yeah.
And sometimes there were, like I said,
But you know, on a side note, Thomas Edison was trying to talk to the dead. So was Marconi.
He was, yeah.
And attempts of trying to talk to the dead actually brought forth ideas like radio. That's where radio came from.
Yeah.
And I believe X-ray technology originally had something to do with trying to capture ghosts on film.
Yeah, you might be right about that.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure that Edison was kind of into.
He was a spiritualist.
Yeah, he was a spiritualist, and he was.
They were trying to talk to the dead even back in the day.
Yeah, well, you know,
it caused technology. It's weird. Technology is magic that works.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
Yeah,
it sure is. So, like I said, these happened over a really long period of time. Now, all of the people, the mediums that were there. All of the Society for Psychical Research people that were there, some other kind of well-known scientists like Rupert Sheldrake, the he's a biochemist or something like that. He was there. He has some wacky ideas, but, you know, he seems...
I like Sheldrake, though.
Yeah, he seems kind of legit. Most of his shit's kind of legit, even though he does have some...
Well, he's just kind of open-minded, you know. He doesn't say he knows that, you know, such and such is true. He's just like, maybe, or maybe we should consider this, you know. Now, some of the stuff that Sheldrake believes, or at least considered, I think is a little wacky, like the concept that we know how the human eye works. We know how eyes work.
Yeah.
Light goes into it like a lens, and then there's rods and cones in the back of it, and an image is formed in your mind. For a while there, he was thinking, well, maybe something's coming out of the eyeball.
That's right. That was that guy, yeah.
Yeah. And making things real, which is kind of an alternate explanation for vision. But I think we safely say that no, that's
how
an eye works.
He does also do a lot of investigation into telepathic communication between animals and humans.
Yeah.
Which...
There's actually some...
it's not as crazy as it sounds.
Some evidence to it suggested that dogs know when the owner's coming back home. There's no way that they could hear, you know.
I mean, he does tell telepathy between people, too. But, you know, that was what I remembered most, because I always remember fight. Because I was always trying to establish psychic communication with our kitty cat. She knows what I'm saying.
Yeah.
She knows what I'm thinking.
All right, let's get back on.
Anyway, so he was one of the ones that was there. And so they all said, I mean, they all seemed to be believing that they saw. They said they saw figures. They said they saw faces.
Disembodied faces.
Disembodied hands that touched them.
Yeah.
The
weird thing about the disembodied face is that they would see a hazy face that could talk and it would move and talk at the same time.
Right.
Floating around in the room. Now, they didn't say whether or not it was an image on the wall.
Yeah.
Which we can get to that later. It was just that they would just see an image.
There was also some apparent like poltergeist activity, you know, the standard table rising up.
Right.
And evidently
rising up and spinning with crystals.
Yeah, that's what
on
I was
going
to say. They had luminous crystals around the outer rim of the table, I guess like glued on the outside, and they said that
they weren't glued, they were just sat there.
Oh, they were just sat there. Okay.
Yeah, but when it spun, they didn't fly off.
Right. They said they saw this, but like I said, it should be noted that every single one of these séances took place in the dark.
Complete darkness.
It was pretty much complete darkness.
Yeah. No, they said complete darkness. Yeah. Other than any radiant light that would come off of something that was glowing.
Right.
So.
Now, darkness. When the SPR dudes investigated, and like I said, this is why I kind of hesitate to call this an experiment, because yes, they did try to establish some kind of rudimentary controls, but pretty much the extent of that was they made the mediums, well, they actually, the medium said,
suggested, yeah.
The medium suggested we will wear luminous wristbands that are fastened with Velcro so you can see where our hands are at all times so you know we're not moving our hands.
Right.
And that was pretty much the only control that was established.
Yeah.
And that was the medium suggestion, as I said. So, you know, I don't know. And we're at the halfway point, so let's take a break. And after we come back from the break, I kind of want to break down what the problems are with a lot of these experiments.
There's a lot of problems with this.
Yeah. You know, at the beginning, I just kind of wanted to say what they said they saw and why they were all excited about it. I also want to talk a little bit about that documentary, the famous documentary, like the official one about this.
Yeah, you know, when I first found this case, mentioned in a book sometime in the 90s, and then I saw that documentary a long time ago, the one that we rewatched again.
Yeah.
And at the time, I was like, wow, this is a really extraordinary case. Jeez, there must be something to this. Boy, these claims, you know. But I was younger then, you know. And now that I look at it now and then read some of the critical analysis of this, I go, well, of course. And really, when you hear the story of the Skoll experiments in more detail, there are huge problems with this.
Yeah.
Big problems.
And honestly, I didn't know like a huge amount about this until recently. Like I had heard of it. And I had heard of how it was this big, like, earth-shaking, you know, series of experiments. And they had proved all this and that.
Saw this and, you know, this really did happen.
And this really happened and stuff like that. But then when I started looking into it and reading
more detail,
what actually happened, and even, like I said, seeing the kind of documentary that was produced about it, I'm like, it's really not all that compelling, I have to say.
Well, it's compelling, but not in quite in the direction I think that they wanted it to go.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. Okay, so let's take a break, and we will be back in just a few minutes.
Ladies and gentlemen, Project Entertainment Network presents The Mondo Method. Introducing the mentor, he's the greatest manager of all time, Mondo Guerrero! And parts unknown, up-and-coming superstar, The Great Buddha!
Okay, so their names are really Armand, Rosamelia, and Chuck Buddha. And old man Armand is going to teach Cooper, Snapper, and Chuck how to write a book. And maybe you too, while they're at it. With marketing morsels from Parents Sweet Kamahari. Exclusively on Project Entertainment Network.
Subculture Corsets and Clothing is our favorite store for unusual clothing, shoes, and accessories. They offer a wide selection of men's and women's clothing at great prices. Subculture also offers a cool selection of shoes and accessories. Steampunk, gothic apparel, retro, corsets, and so much more at Subculture Corsets and Clothing. Check out Subculture online at subculturecorsets.com. That's subculturecorsets.com. Make sure you use the discount code 13 o'clock for a 10% discount. Subculturecorsets.com or visit their store in Jacksonville, Florida, just off I-95.
Watch out! There's a new terror taking over kitchens around the world. Thrills, chills, mad cooking skills.
It Cooks, a weekly podcast brimming with recipes, tips, food finds, seasonal specials, and guests galore. Hosted by horror author Amber Fallon, hey, that's me, a foodie with over 20 years experience cooking, baking, and generally making a nuisance of herself. You've watched Food Network, you've read cookbooks, but nothing can prepare you for It Cooks, coming to a device near you.
There are terrors, real and imaginary, and I write about them all. Paranormal nonfiction, horror fiction, the Rochdale House Poltergeist, the Mammoth Mountain Poltergeist, the Associated Hopeful Monsters, Red Menace, the Five Poisons, Bellwether. Go to www.jennyashford.com or search Amazon for the Jenny Ashford author page.
Okay, the Skoll experiment.
Yes, big problem.
Now, here's the thing. Let's talk a little bit about the documentary. And if you want to watch the documentary, it's called The Afterlife Experiment.
Yeah.
Or The Afterlife... What the fuck is it called? Afterlife something or other.
Yeah, but you guys
got Afterlife Uncovered.
Yeah, you can see it
for free. Skull Experiment.
You can see it for free on YouTube.
It's all over YouTube. UFO TV has it. There's a link to it from the official Skull Experiment website.
We recommend
that
you watch it and just...
Yeah.
You'll get a giggle out of it.
Yeah. Now, here, like I said, if you are already inclined to believe it, then I can see why the documentary might confirm your belief.
The documentary is a mishmash of a bunch of shit together.
Right.
Most of it doesn't have anything to do with Skull Experiment.
That's the first criticism of the documentary is that, it's called The Afterlife, whatever. But it's supposed to be about the Skull Experiment. The problem is the actual Skull Experiments were not videotaped.
No.
The videotape footage you see in the documentary is a current
ongoing seance group. I think it was
in
Italy.
With the same medium.
Okay.
That took place in 2008. So those are not Skull Experiment, the video that you're seeing. There are snippets of audio, because audio was permitted at the Skull Experiment, but not video. So there is no video footage. There are some photographs, but not very many. Another thing is that the documentary is really it's not very focused. There's a large chunk of it taken up with, there's a guy in Italy named, his name's Bocci, right? Mr. Bocci.
Right, he's doing the old Marconi thing, man.
Yeah, where he claims to be able to talk to dead people
through the radio. Yeah.
And all these people come and they talk to their dead people and it's all very heartwarming and everything like that. But, you know, that doesn't really have anything to do with the Skull Experiment. Now, those mediums did visit that guy, but not until after the Skull Experiment was over.
And I don't understand how you can have some old guy with an antique radio, talking to the dead and receiving messages from the dead, and he's going, oh, by the way, there's no one in this area with a transmitter.
Yeah, I don't see how they could rule that out.
Yeah, there's no way that there's a transmitter in this area. Man, it's somebody with a transmitter talking through the radio.
That seems like a very easy thing to do.
Yeah, and they're evidently seeing and hearing what's going on in the so-called seance room and responding to the questions.
Yeah.
There's a bug. The place is bugged.
Yeah.
You know?
Which, like I said, again, would be easy to do.
So.
But so it seems like a large part of the documentary is taken up with that. There's also a lot of useless footage of kind of person on the street. Like, you know, they go around England and go, what do you think about the afterlife? Do you think there is one? It's like this, their opinions
relevant. Their opinions don't mean shit. And then and the way it's edited and the sound effects in the background, you know, they kind of pushing you in the direction, hey, because this person, random person on the street, believes in an afterlife, it's true.
Yeah, that's what I cannot stand documentaries that try to bolster their case by just asking random people what their opinion is. I'm like, who fucking cares what their opinion is? It doesn't matter. It doesn't make things any less true or false.
The whole thing
behind asking a random person what their opinion is about
it. The whole purpose of the so-called Skull Experiments was to prove the existence of life after death.
Right.
Okay. And that's not happening in this program, and it didn't happen in the Skull Experiments.
Yeah. But like I said, the documentary, not compelling. And they also took up a large chunk of time with this poor woman, and I feel bad for her.
Yeah, talking to her.
Whose son died in a boat accident.
Right.
And she claims that she can talk to him through this little recorder
thing.
And
the woman is clearly unhinged.
And it's very sad. And, you know, you would be sad if your son died. That would suck.
Sure.
But, you know, I don't like the whole kind of exploitative. And like I said, that didn't have anything to do with the Skull Experiment either. It seemed, the whole documentary seemed very thin, because they don't have much footage of it. They reused the same footage.
Right.
They reused the same shots over and over.
Yeah, really, the whole documentary is talking about the Skull Experiments, but not showing you the Skull Experiments and avoiding most of the Skull Experiment.
Yeah, because like they said, they had no video footage.
Yeah.
Of the Skull Experiment.
They don't mention anything outside of their conclusion. In other words, they don't present any of the problems that the Skull Experiments
have. Like, I think they have one token skeptic on there who's on screen for maybe 3 minutes.
Right.
Like, through the whole thing saying, no, I don't think so. But then they have, like, all these other people going, oh, scientists, they're materialists, and they don't believe this and that. But the thing is, okay.
Let's get down to the nitty gritty.
Let's get down to the problem.
The skull experiment was not an experiment. It was a demonstration.
Basically.
And the reason why it was not an experiment is because there were no controls.
Right.
The two major problems are this. They would only do the seances at the home of the people, of the
Foys.
Of the Foys.
There were a couple done other places, but that was the main.
That was the main thing. And when they did them somewhere else, the results were varied.
Quote unquote variable.
Variable.
According to its own report.
Produce the same phenomena in other locations. And they're going to give excuses why. And here's the second problem. The biggest claim, the strongest piece of evidence that the case has is this strange anomaly about film. Images being produced on film while it's inside of a locked box and untouched by people. All right. Developed by the investigators.
Right. Film. Which seems pretty airtight.
That sounds good. The problem is it's always their box and they could never use someone else's box. The box, upon further examination, could be, even though it was locked, could be easily opened at the hinges.
Without disengaging
the lock. Oh, it wasn't the hinges? It was the hasp?
Okay. Yeah.
You could get into the box.
And
in the dark.
It should be noted that this fact was pointed out in the Skull report by that scientist, Montague Keene.
Yeah.
Who was one of the SPR guys.
Yeah.
Who was at a lot of the sessions.
Right.
And who, in the documentary, he's dead now, unfortunately, but because he seemed like a nice man. But, it was in the documentary, he seemed all gung-ho about this whole experiment, but he wrote himself that this box provided by the mediums was taken to the University of Nottingham, and it was found that it could be easily opened without disengaging the padlock.
Yeah. Now, the Foys would say, well, everyone sitting at the table had glowing armbands on. We know nobody reached across the table to open the box and switch the film. But the thing is this is happening in a dark room. This all goes all the way back to the early 1900s, late 1800s, where you're having a traditional seance in a blackened room, all right, with assistants wearing black clothes, black leotards that come out of an adjoining room or from out from underneath secret compartments and couches and in furniture. They come out and they do all this stuff just like in a stage act. You know, it's a magic tricks. And the glowing balls, LED lights on the ends of wires.
Or laser pointers
that touch crystals and illuminate them. Now, this whole thing about the faces and the moving images, easily explained by pinholes. What do you call that?
A pinhole camera.
Pinhole cameras. Explain them how a pinhole camera can work.
Well, basically it's just, I mean, when you make a pinhole camera, I made one myself in school, but you're just making a box. And you're making it so light can come in, but it's only coming out the other end through this little tiny...
Yeah, there's no lens.
And it casts an image. It's upside down. And you can, project this image onto film, or you can project it onto a wall or whatever. It's not a clear image, obviously.
Right.
Because it's very crude.
So what you can do, and there was an adjoining room to that basement.
Which was only checked once at the beginning of series, and reportedly was not ever checked again.
Right. What you can do is you can have somebody in an adjoining room, or you can have somebody hidden in a piece of furniture that's totally light tight. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Where only light can exit, but it has a light source inside there. So you have a lit room or a lit compartment with a person who's probably upside down. Okay. Cause he's looking through a small hole, really, you know, upside down, and it casts an image out through a pinhole. And then you have an assistant all in a black leotard with a small handheld mirror, capturing that image and then reflecting it into the room. And he can put it anywhere inside that room with using a small handheld mirror. There's a bunch of little magic tricks that you can do to do the phenomena that's reported. None of the phenomena was inexplicable when you really look at it.
And like I said, even the kind of stuff like Rupert Sheldrake and some of the other people that said they saw a disembodied hand, like I said, that would also be easy to produce.
Easy.
Like I said, somebody with a black suit, they could have a glove on and they have luminous paint on their hand. They could take the glove off at some point and you would see the hand and that's it.
If you have two or three hidden assistants in black leotards, some of them in the room, some of them outside the room, it's totally choreographed, just like a stage magic show. All right, you can produce a lot of strange phenomena that is impressive to people who don't know what they're seeing. And there won't be any evidence of trickery or deception.
And we should note that there was never found to be any evidence of fraud or trickery.
Right.
That doesn't mean there wasn't any. And that doesn't mean it's real. I don't want to cast aspersions on the Foys. You know, they seem like nice old people and stuff like that. I don't want to come out and say, yeah, they were defrauding people or yeah, they were doing all these tricks. However, because of the way the skull experiments were conducted, there is no way to rule that out. Because honestly, all of the phenomena that was produced could have been faked.
Yeah. Look at it this way.
And it wouldn't have been difficult to fake them.
These claims are so earth-shattering and so great. And the evidence, if it was so great, the scientific community would be all over this.
Yeah.
But they weren't.
Yeah.
They weren't because they saw through it because of the lack of the controls.
Yeah.
It's in the same way. It's the same with, like Penn and Teller or David Blaine. David Blaine does some awesome magic tricks. There's no evidence. There's no suggestion of deception, really, in what you're seeing. As long as you're sitting there in your chair or you're watching the trick, there's no evidence of deception. But it's a deception. Everybody knows it's a deception. That's why you don't have scientists going to David Blaine trying to figure out how's he violating, you know,
the laws of physics, right?
Because everybody knows it's a trick. Well, you can do the same thing.
Even though you can't figure out how he did it, it's still a trick.
Yeah, it's still a trick. And in a darkened room with a team of basically magicians, you know, you can produce some awesome phenomena that's compelling to someone who's sitting there at a table.
Yeah.
All right. Now, there's a lot of stuff they would not allow. They would not allow night vision cameras.
No infrared.
So that right there, that's a red flag. They're going to come up with some kind of spiritualist response. Well, those infrared radiation breaks down the spirit's ability to move things. And what they really mean is that you'll see guys in black leotards walking
running around the room, dark.
Yeah.
I should note, too, that there was a scene in the documentary, because I forgot to mention this, of one of the newer seances, and they were all very excited that these flower petals had quote unquote apported into the room.
Yeah.
What's weird about that, one, this particular seance was not even conducted under the very lax controls of the skull experiment.
Yeah.
Two, I find it interesting that the cameraman somehow knew to film everyone's feet all of a sudden.
Yeah,
the rose petals were falling.
Yeah, they set the shot up.
Yeah, before they were filming the table, all the people's faces.
Yeah.
You know, so it seemed a little fishy. I'm like, oh, suddenly you just decided to film everyone's feet and like flower petals happened to fall. Okay, I'm not buying it.
Now, here's another thing. This is why it doesn't prove the existence of the afterlife, which was the whole point of the skull experiments. All you have to do is listen to Robin Foy on maybe one of his podcasts.
Yeah, we listened to one yesterday, a two-hour interview.
You'll find out that Mr. Foy believes in everything. He believes in everything at the same time. He believes in ghosts, angels, demons, life after death, aliens, what else? Elemental spirits, jinn, okay. Well, his claim is that these are voices of dead people. But if you also believe in jinn and demons and things like that, what's to say that these are not the voices of dead people, but these are jinn, okay?
Right.
Impersonating dead people. Or maybe psychic parasites. So still, it wouldn't be evidence. You have to prove that it's dead people that are talking to you.
Well,
and not just elemental spirits claiming to be dead people. So, you know, it's very problematic.
And it should be noted, too, that even if the phenomena the people saw at the skull experiment were genuine, that would not prove afterlife.
No.
Because those same things, if they were genuinely paranormal, could have been produced by psychokinesis, for example.
Psychic powers.
Or something like that, of the living people that were there.
Exactly.
So like I said, again, doesn't prove existence of life after death, no. Which is what they sought out to prove.
Right.
I'd also like, I think I forgot to mention this when we were talking about what they saw at the thing, was the thing, remember the thing about the crystal?
Yeah, the crystal would light up. Oh, no, the guy would touch the crystal.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, evidently what happened, and I forgot to mention this earlier, one of the things that they said they saw, and some of the Society for Psychical Research science guys said they saw this. They had a little, like a little crystal quartz or whatever it was. And they said they saw it float up and then it came back down and it landed in a little glass dish. And the ghost told them to touch it and they touched it and it was normal and solid. And then they said, okay, now touch it again. And they touched it again. Now you could still see the crystal just like before, but now their fingers just went through it. Like it was not, like it had no material substance.
Right.
And the ghosts, the spirit team, claimed that this is what they were trying to, this is how they were trying to demonstrate, you know, what spiritual energy was like. Like you can still see it, it looks normal, but it's like immaterial.
Right. It's like the spirit of the crystal.
Right.
Yeah.
But it should be noted, even though that, you know, people said that they saw this and they said they touched it and then they couldn't touch it. Witness testimony is subjective.
Yeah.
There's no video of it.
It was down inside of a glass dish, dish of some sort. I suspect it was some kind of a reflection.
Yeah, it may have been.
Or another possibility, and I think probably more likely, because this wasn't videotaped and you're just dealing with witness testimony, that may have never happened at all. They just claimed that that happened.
Yeah. Like I said, there's no way of proving that. That's right. See, this is why witness testimony, that's like the worst. This is the worst aspect of any kind of paranormal stuff, is because everyone's experiences are subjective.
Have no problem presenting witness testimony, but you can't claim that to be proof. It's just testimony.
Yeah.
Just like in a court of law, witness testimony is not evidence. It's just testimony.
Yeah.
Evidence is physical.
Yeah.
All right. And that's, and proof can only come from evidence.
Yeah. Because there are so many things. I mean, that person could be lying. They could be mistaken. They could have been seeing things.
Right.
You know, there could have been fraud and they thought it was real. You know what I mean? It's, we're not necessarily saying that they were just making it up. Maybe they did see that, but maybe that thing was produced in a way that, that they weren't expecting, or maybe it was a trick and they fell for it or something like that. And like I said, the problem with the skull experiment and why it's, you know, not nearly as big a deal as a lot of people in the paranormal community think it is because there's just no way of knowing.
Actually, all of that
could be real.
Yeah, I don't actually think it's a big deal in the paranormal community. I think it's more of a big deal in the spiritualist community.
Yeah,
which
is a small subset of the paranormal community.
It's more of a
new
age type thing.
Sure.
And really, when you look at the overall pattern of the entire Skold experiment, that's 19th century spiritualism. That's just a traditional seance with a couple of new high-tech tricks.
But mostly the same kinds of tricks.
Same thing. Just a higher tech spin on it.
Yeah. I mean, and we talked a little bit about this on our Houdini and the Spiritualist show. You know, all the mediums back then, all the spiritualist mediums, they employed like a pretty standard bag of tricks for doing these various manifestations. Like I said, they would have accomplices, they would have pinhole cameras. Nowadays, you know, they can use laser pointers and luminous paint and various other things. But it's really I didn't see anything in the Skoll experiment that was any different than the manifestation back then, other than the film thing.
Right.
But I've seen magicians do that type of shit.
All you'd have to do is do three things and it would totally foil the entire Skoll experiment. One, take the whole group, the whole, all your seances, all your mediums and all the people, the guests to the seance, and you move that to a neutral area, like a warehouse.
Where no one knows ahead of time.
No one knows ahead of time. Then you introduce a box, a control box. In other words, a box that actually locks and everybody agrees that there's no way to get into it. And you put that on the table. And then three, put a camera, an IR camera. There'd be no phenomena.
Yeah. Well, and it should be noted that Richard Wiseman, he submitted his own, light proof envelopes for some of the film. And when they put the film in there, instead of their special lockbox,
yeah,
nothing
happened.
Turned up on it. Nothing turned up on it.
There's another thing that's quite fishy. He stopped the experiment.
Yeah, in 1998.
In 1998, wouldn't continue anymore. And what's the reason? Tell him, Jenny.
The reason, reportedly, is that he had opened an interdimensional doorway, I believe.
Yes.
In order to facilitate kind of this communication or whatever it was they were trying to do. And apparently, experimenters were coming from the future. And yes, various other ghosts and spirits were coming from
time
the future.
Time travelers.
Yes, and telling him that his interdimensional doorway was messing up the space-time continuum.
Mm-hmm.
And it needed to be closed.
Yes, and this was not mentioned in any documentary.
I just found it on like a paranormal site. And evidently, like I said, I don't know if that's true, but it was reported on this one paranormal site.
That's going to be true.
After listening to him for a couple hours yesterday, I'm like, yeah, that sounds like something he would say.
That sounds just like him.
That sounds like something he would say.
And that's the same kind of thing that a 1800s
because you can't disprove that.
You can't disprove it. Basically, it's equivalent to saying, well, God told me to stop it.
Yeah,
the angel said stop.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course, you know they're stopping because they know that people are onto them and it's only a matter of time before the whole thing's
unmasked. Or they just got sick of that.
It was going to be unmasked. Now, I think there was some monetary motive, too.
Do have a book.
The case was monetized. You can put it that way. They were selling a book, and what else were they?
Well, they were selling the documentary that you can see on YouTube. Right. They also have a 2 DVD set of that. I believe it's the same documentary, but it's got all this extra footage and stuff like that. So yeah, you got to pay for that if you want to see it. They have the 300-page Skoll report, which I believe is £15, which I don't know how much that is in American currency today. But you know, you can buy that, and they have a whole book about it. They're actually pretty good at keeping information about it, like what actually happened. You know, there's summaries of it everywhere, but I think they want you to buy the book. There's not, you know, there's little snippets of audio. That's about it.
Yeah, but I don't really think the book was the money maker. Yeah. If you ask me, what I think was going on is that the entire Skoll experiment was an advertisement for a seance service.
Yeah.
Because they could hold seances in their house.
Yeah.
So if you want a seance done to talk to a dead loved one, who are you going to go to? Well, somebody who has this
book. Yeah, he's like a super famous,
The super famous, you know. So they were probably charging people, you know, admission into seances outside the Skoll experiment.
Yeah, we don't know that. We're just
speculating. But probably, because that would be a decent way to make a few bucks, is to say, oh, your son died? Well, you know who we are. Come on in. You know,
we'll go
talk to him, you know. Yeah. It's going to cost you $400.
Yeah.
That, I guarantee you that's what it was all about.
I got to say, though, like, the more we talked about this case and stuff like that, because as much as I think, like, seances are fake and shit like that, I love the whole, like, aesthetic of them, especially, like, the old Victorian ones and all the ectoplasm and the glowing shit. That's so awesome.
Yeah, we should actually have our own seance service.
See, that's what I wanted to do. I said, okay, you know how people have, like, a murder mystery dinner theater and stuff like that? Okay, you should do one like that, but it's, like, the seance experience.
Yeah.
You could have, like, a Victorian parlor with all the candles and shit.
You let everybody know it's a magic trick.
Yeah, you can't don't tell people it's real. That sucks. Don't do that. But, you know, if they know, they're like, you're just going to get the experience of a seance.
Yeah,
it's not real. It's just like a magic show.
Right.
And you'll have, like, all these, and, you know, it'd be all like a little glowing horn to be flying around. And I'm just that'd be fucking awesome. I would love that.
Yeah, we rehearse it and train our friends how to do it. And
Would you guys contribute to a Kickstarter? Because if somebody else did that, I would be all over that shit. I would go every week. You'd have to like change the show up every now and then.
Yeah.
You could like personalize it to people. If you had somebody that was good at like cold reading or that kind of shit.
You'd have to do it from the house. You had to start tearing apart the house to have secret rooms and stuff so you could go in and out of place, or couches that came apart so you could sneak in and out of a couch. And you need basically total darkness.
Yeah.
So I don't know how. You know,
well, to borrow a phrase from the God Awful Movies podcast, if I had crazy billionaire money, I would start the seance experience.
Yeah.
Another thing I wanted to mention too about the fucking seances and about how it wasn't anything impressive was I was going to talk about the apports.
Yeah.
Because if you'll notice, everything that was apported, and there's like pictures of it online. It was just like little shit. It was like a pocket knife.
Something
it
you
was
put
a,
in your pocket. Not,
it was a necklace, stuff like that. I said, okay, now, if you really want to impress me with a seance, let's see you bitches apport an SUV or a live giraffe.
Yeah.
Let's see how that, you know, then I'll be impressed.
But Copperfield could do that on camera.
That's true.
All right. But here's the thing. At 13 o'clock, we're just going to call it like we see it. Not all of this paranormal stuff is true. Not all of it. It can't all be true.
Yeah.
But I think some of it is, and some of it is a mixture of true and false. But, you know, because I've seen paranormal stuff. Yeah. So has Jenny. You know, but classic poltergeist. And an OBE, and I had an NDE. But a lot of that's subjective.
Yeah.
The only thing that was objective was me and my family witnessed classic poltergeist phenomena.
Yeah.
So, but when it comes to things like seance, no.
And also,
I'm gonna side with Houdini.
Yeah, okay. Me too. I have to
I'm
say.
Side with Houdini.
And I have to say, like on this one too, it seems like later they tried to like tie it in with other stuff. Like one of the images that they obtained looked like a cartoon of a blue alien face.
Yeah.
So now they're saying, you know, some of them are aliens or they're interdimensional beings or whatever.
Yeah.
It was,
and that's to kind of scoop in some of the UFO cult crowd.
That's what I mean. They're just widening their market.
Widening the market.
You know, and like I said, I don't want to be a dick. They seem like nice people, and I guess they're still alive. I don't know, but you know, they seem like nice people. Do I think they were perpetrating a fraud? Probably. I'm not going to say that. But because there were no controls in place, because they weren't really investigated all that stringently, there's no way of knowing. So any conclusions they came to are useless.
Right.
That's all I'm saying.
If they were the real deal, then they need to redo the experiment with real controls on it.
With tight controls,
real controls on it.
Like you said, has to take place somewhere other than their house.
And of course, that's not going to happen.
Everybody, it should be filmed, infrared,
right,
everything.
Right.
And everything should be brought to them. They should not be allowed to say, oh, we're going to make luminous armbands and put them on. Oh, we're going to bring a box to put the film in.
But of course, that's not going to happen because time travelers from the future told them that they were going to rip apart the space-time continuum.
If
so they can't.
So they can't do it anymore.
They can't do it
that's
anymore.
That's a shame.
So he's protecting us now.
Well, I appreciate that.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Mr.
I appreciate
that.
Anyway, okay, so we're coming to the end of the show. Hope you enjoyed that, again, I don't think that was as rambling as they usually are, though.
No.
If you like the seance topic, we also did one a couple weeks back on Houdini and his debunking of spiritualists. So I'll put a link there if you want to read that on the YouTube show. I'll put a link.
Mention the shirts. We got really cool shirts.
We got shirts if you want to go to Zazzle.com/13o'clock. They're very cool. We have some ourselves.
Yeah. And we got a Crowley shirt coming.
Yeah. I'm going to do a Crowley shirt next, actually, because we did Crowley a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
And, you know, and also another shout out to Project Entertainment Network, on which our audio version is hosted. They have a Patreon if you want to go give them some money. And also, if you want to like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter, we're at 13 o'clock podcast. And that's probably about it, right? I mean, that's all the usual shit I say.
Yeah. Okay. You should end this one with another song.
Last time you put
music on it.
I know. Well, that was the first time I ever did that just because there was
I think it was cool with music at the end of it.
Well, now I have to think of a seance
theme
song.
We'll find something. We'll
make it,
something.
Making my life
harder. Oh, Ouija board.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, from Morrissey.
God damn it. You're awesome. All right. So I'm, okay. All right. I'm going to put that at the end. We'll get this out in a minute. Okay. So see you guys next Tuesday. Bye.
Ouija board. Would you work for me? I have got to say hello to an old friend. Ouija board, Ouija board, Ouija board. Would you work for me? I have got to get through to a good friend. Thank you.
This has been an exclusive presentation of the Project Entertainment Network.